Hey friends! You might not recognize this voice. My name is Kendra. I do the marketing for Golden Coast Mead. You might be hearing a little bit more of me from now on as I help Frank with the Regenerative Mead podcast.
Woo-hoo! Welcome, Kendra. So stoked to have you. What are we going to talk about this week?
Today, we are going to talk about mead events. So working events, introducing novices and experts alike to all of the beautiful nuances of Golden Coast mead. Because as you may have learned by now, we are very unlike most other meaderies around. Then we're going to talk about the re-release of our beautiful historic mead, Kvasir. It's got an amazing story behind it. I implore you to go back and listen to our original episode titled Kvasir, all about this episode. We will give a little recap in this episode, however, so you're not totally out of the loop. Then we're going to finish up talking about experiencing mead with your friends and family and how to have a great mead gathering. So whether that's bringing mead to a party or hosting people and serving them mead, how to do it best, what to pair it with, how to store it, how to serve it. And we can't wait for you to join us on this adventure today.
I think the storing part's in a different episode, but the serving and the pairing is totally gonna be in this episode. There's a different episode about storing. Hey, Kendra.
Hello, Frank.
Cheers.
Cheers.
What are we drinking here?
Jamaica Dulce.
Yeah. It is a red mead. It's like a magenta. What color would you call that?
That is, yeah, a beautiful deep red.
Yeah. And for those listeners who are like, wait, where's Brando? Well, Brando left us and is working at Lost Cause, another meadery in San Diego, which we're pretty excited for him for. He has a full-time gig there running their tasting rooms. And it's pretty great. It's the second intermeadery talent transfer that has happened between Golden Coast Mead and Lost Cause. So, you know, we got a regular industry happening, just like people leave Facebook and go and work for Google, and then they leave Google and go and work for Apple. It's basically what's going on down here in San Diego in the mead industry now. So congrats, Brando. We hope to have a podcast with you in the near future, hopefully at MeadCon West on the 23rd of October at Lost Cause. But we'll see if he has enough seniority in his job to make that happen that early on. But we're stoked because Kendra is here, and Kendra is our head of marketing and brand manager. She does all of our social medias for us and helps us keep a pulse on the people that we're trying to serve this mead to. So we're stoked to have her today on the podcast. And we're going to talk about her view on the mead world and what we do here in Golden Coast Mead, and talk about her experience at events, because that's going to be kind of the focus of the episode today, is talking about what it's like to serve mead at events. And how there are some events where it works really well and all the pieces are already in place, and then some events where the pieces are a little out of place and how we've got to move the pieces into place to make it work. So we're going to talk about what those pieces are, and then how sometimes we have some meads that just really capture people's imaginations. And we'll dive into one of those meads in particular, the Kvasir, which is like the ancient historical mead. And then we're going to talk about you hosting your own mead events and what pieces need to be in place to make that happen. How's that sound, Kendra?
Amazing.
All right. So, Kendra, why don't you tell us about yourself and what you do here at Golden Coast Mead?
Absolutely. I joined Golden Coast. It's been just over 2 years now. Year and a half, maybe.
Yeah.
And started out doing farmers markets, and it was a great place to start in the mead world. You know, getting to try all of our new seasonal and small batch flavors, and just being, you know, in there deep with the customers face to face every week, seeing their reactions to new flavors and our core meads. So being face to face with those customers was a great place to start within the company. Later on, I took on the role of the brand manager and doing the marketing, and having that face-to-face experience with customers definitely has helped make that job a lot easier and make me feel a lot more connected to our mead drinkers.
Yeah, there's nothing like being in front of the customers every weekend, pouring on the mead, and then like seeing them respond. And you know, when you're in your own little shop doing this thing that you love, you wonder how it's going to land with the people you're doing it for. But then when you actually get to go out and meet those people and share it with them, you get a very real test of whether it lands or not. And ideally, you play it cool. So you're not like, hey, I hope you love this. You're just like, here's some options for you. So it is wonderful, because then Kendra comes back from those events and then shares with the team what people were responding with, what they were really connecting with on both a product level and a messaging level. So do you want to share some of that, like what it's like to harvest that information and what themes you see people connect with both on the product and on the messaging?
Yeah, totally. I would say right off the bat, one of the first things that is a main topic of discussion is just initially, what is mead? You know, at events, we've got signage kind of talking about, you know, it's the alcohol made from honey. And if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you very well already knew that. But that is a big first step in a lot of in-person events. It's just explaining what mead is at a very base level. And then going from there, a lot of people who maybe have had mead in the past, their experience, you know, isn't always positive. Traditional mead can be a little bit more... what's the word I'm looking for? Can be a little more advanced. You know, it's not something you're going to pick up at your first college party and drink it. It's something that needs to be explored a little bit more by most people. So having a mead that's lighter, drier, served chilled, having a sour option, I mean, that alone will just absolutely blow people away if they have any familiarity with mead. And then going on from there, getting people to try it. We are frequently asked if that it's okay that we're sampling at farmers markets or at events. Yes, it's legal. We have all the right things in place to be there. And, you know, we've always got a pretty good variety. We've got something dry. We've got something sweet. We've got something sour. Maybe something else entirely off of that, off of those three. So always having a big variety and not just the super sweet, not just the super thick, has definitely opened a lot of people's eyes to what mead could be and is now.
Totally. Yeah. It's a delight to see people come to the booth with a preconceived notion and then to be able to serve them the sour or the spice sour or the session meads and then go, whoa, I had no idea mead could be like this. Or I've never tried mead before at all, but this isn't how I imagined it. Ever. So, and then sometimes we give them the sweet, and like the Jamaica Dulce here is definitely a sweeter mead, but there's this florality to it. I think one of the things that I love to hear people say is your meads taste like honey. Yes. You know, like it's an expression of honey turned into a drink, and sometimes it's light and floral and dry and refreshing. Sometimes it's tart and floral and refreshing. Sometimes it's sweet, but the honey is at the root, and we want to express that. We want to accentuate that. And I've heard you say that a lot, that our customers connect with that and they're excited about it. So thank you for doing that and bringing that perspective. And I think, you know, there are some events where it really works, where people are ready for that, where the pieces are in place. And there's some events where it's like, oh, this is taking a lot of effort. And can you maybe talk about that, about the difference between an event where it's naturally easy to share mead with the audience and then our, you know, customers, the people that are there, and then there's events where it's like, oh, okay, we gotta start from square zero here. Yeah. And build up.
Definitely. So recently we were up in Vista at the Vista Viking Festival back in September. This was their 20-something year of doing it, and they have a huge following. So that's an event where most people who are going either have heard of mead or are already mead fans. You know, this is a drink that a lot of time is tied to this specific period of time. We have a lot of modern interest in culture, in Viking culture and their history and stuff. So, you know, that's a place and that's an event and that's a setting where we're usually not starting with what is mead. It's more like, what are your flavors? What kind of mead do you have? And so being able to go to events like that where you're not having to do education as much as you are just celebrating and enjoying is, you know, it's a totally different kind of fun. I love the events where I am starting it at square zero and blowing people's minds. One of my favorite questions I get asked is, Kendra, how did you think of this? And I would love to take credit for that. However, you know, I definitely did not come up with this idea. So there's lots of fun to be had in both types of events, you know, starting off with the total ground zero education of the potential of mead and what it is and what it can be. And then having people who are very experienced in what mead is and have tasted many varieties and having them try our coffee mead or our sour mead and being completely blown away.
Yeah. Yeah. At Viking Fest, we had coffee mead, sour mead, this Chalatenango Sweet, which is a varietal honey from a region of El Salvador that's kind of an untouched valley. And it had all these apple and caramel notes. And then we had our made mead sour orange blossom session, which is an orange blossom, 5%, lightly tart, very effervescent carbonated mead, and quite the spectrum there.
Yes, yes.
Like, and it was so cool to see so many different people coming back for so many different varieties of mead, but they're all under the same tent, literally.
Yeah.
And like, it became really fun to almost have this little community that formed around these very different versions of this ancient drink. I mean, people who were like in full on costume, and then people who are just like with their kids and like, yeah, I'm just at Viking Fest checking it out, and like the whole spectrum in between. It was fun working with you there and seeing you be like, dude, this is like, this space is our space. Like, these people don't need any explanation. They're like here for this whole thing. And I felt that same feeling of like, ah, if only the whole world understood and appreciated me the way that the people who come to the Vista Viking Fest do, which is a small fraction of the world, but what we're set out to do, right, is turn people into mead enthusiasts.
And well, even what's beautiful about that audience is these are people that are very familiar with what mead is, have had many varieties, maybe even have had our mead before. But there is still so much room for even more exploration and education. A lot of those people who are very in touch with, you know, trying different kinds of mead, maybe have never heard about its regenerative qualities, or it's never really been broken down for them. So even the people that are, you know, quote unquote, hardcore mead fans, they love it. I mean, we still have, everyone has something to learn. So even that is another awesome experience to have someone who's already a fan, who already knows what it is. And then for us to have the chance to tell them even more amazing things about mead, about how we don't need any crops to make this. And it's just really cool to see people want to take that and spread the message themselves.
Yeah. When people tried the Chalatenango Sweet, there'd be this like gap between tasting it and perceiving this apple forward caramel finish, rich, complex drinking experience. And then them be like, wait, that's just from honey? And we're like, yep, there's nothing added to that. Just honey, water, yeast, and no preservatives, no flavoring, nothing artificial, honey, water, yeast. And they're like, how does it taste like this if it's just honey and water and fermentation? And we're like, yeah, that's the beauty of honey, is 10,000 flower visits in one sip. The bees have to visit a million flowers to make the honey in this bottle. And their minds are just like falling out of their heads at this point. And they were just like, here, come back and have more. And, and then usually they bring friends, you know, like when it really lands. I think sometimes there's the other end of the spectrum, right? Where we like end up at a wine fest, mm-hmm. and like no one's had mead before. Mm-hmm. And do you want to speak about one of those experiences?
I don't know that I've done a specific wine event. I just recently did a beer and taco fest, and I've done lots of other like artisan type markets. So, you know, markets and events where there are other types of alcohol, it is also a great opportunity, you know, especially if it's more than just mead, because people come with the open mind to try different alcohols. They're in an alcohol kind of headspace, you know, hopefully they've got their ride secured for later, that kind of stuff. And then they're a little more, yeah, just open-minded to try something maybe that they would have never, they thought they were coming for all kinds of different beers and whatever else. And to try a mead is unlike anything else.
What is your ideal interaction with one of those customers go like at a festival like that?
Someone who is not familiar with me.
Yeah. And they're like in an open mind state. Hopefully they haven't had too much beer by that point. And they roll up on your tent. What's like, how does the ideal interaction flow?
Ideally, it kind of goes like they walk up. I say hi. They go, what is this? And I say, this is alcohol made from honey. And whether they go, oh, mead, I've always wanted to try. Or they go, oh, you can do that. You know, the next step is getting it into their hands, getting it into their mouths to try. And because we are so uniquely positioned to have this variety of flavors, unlike any other meadery that I've ever known, you know, if they try one and turn their nose up, I'm like, guess what? I've got something else on my lineup that is completely different. And if you didn't like those first two, I've got a third thing that is completely different. So having these options available to kind of please any kind of drinker, if you're into spirits, if you're into wine, if you're into beer, chances are we've got something that's still gonna, you're still really gonna enjoy.
I think that's been something that has worked for me at some of these events where people have no idea mead's gonna be there and they're surprised or totally new to mead. And then they go, well, they just kind of have that, like, what do I do? And then I take that as an opportunity to say, well, what do you like to drink? Like, if you could drink beer, wine, cocktails, sparkling wine right now, what would you have? Mm-hmm. And then based off of that answer, I kind of look at my lineup and like might ask one more question, you know, because if they choose wine, like, okay, do you like strong dry reds? Do you like fruity reds? Do you like dry whites? Do you like fruity or sweet whites? Like, where are you at on the wine spectrum? Then based off of their response, like if I have my ideal lineup is our wildflower sour, our wildflower sweet, one of our kind of experimentals that'll be like the coffee mead or the Jamaica dulce, and then one of the session meads, like the dry made mead. You know, there's, you can cover so many Absolutely. Flavor profiles within that. And so if they want cocktails, I will give them the wildflower sour. And usually they're like, what? Or if they like champagne, like give them the wildflower sour. Yeah. And if they like a sweeter dessert drink, you know, I like sweet. Like, okay, how do you like this? And then if they like something unique, something creative, something cocktail-y, I might give them that third one, which is like the coffee mead or the Jamaica dulce. And then if they just like dry and down the middle and easygoing, then the made mead dry is generally going to make them go, whoa, what's in this? And then we go, there's no preservatives, there's nothing artificial, it's just honey and water and fermentation. And like, hopefully they're like, oh, I'm gonna go bring my friends over, right? That's one of the best responses that we can get.
Absolutely.
Let me go get my friends. Yeah,
absolutely. And that is definitely a response I've seen many times at even farmers markets, but definitely, you know, like the special event kind of things where someone will come in, they'll get a glass, they'll get a taster, they'll come back with a friend. And then 20 minutes later, they came back with two more friends. And then, you know, half an hour later, they all came back for another refill. And so that is a really, really cool thing to witness. People, whether it's their first time trying mead or not. And then you have, you know, potentially at some of these events, you've got dozens of other alcohol vendors. And to see, you know, 10, 12, 20 people continuously coming back to your booth when they've got all these options is a really, really fulfilling feeling.
Yeah,
totally. Like, you've got literally all these options and you've come back to me three times. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah. I agree. And so maybe some conclusions or some guidelines that we can sketch out from here is like, if people know mead and are enthusiastic about mead, then identifying what your niche with your mead is and offering meads that align with that niche so that you can like clearly illustrate that niche with what you're offering these already existing mead fans, right? That's one step to success, I think. Mm-hmm. And then if people are new to mead, having the ability to guide them in a direction with mead that bridges their existing drinking with their future mead drinking, right? So be that bridge into the mead world for them is like a successful strategy to convert people into mead, or at least introduce them to mead in a joyful, successful way.
Yeah. And you know, in kind of regards of you talking about, like, you know, if you could drink anything right now, whether it's champagne, a cocktail, whatever, and then, you know, trying to find a mead based on that. I feel the same way about mead, and we've talked about this before, as I do about like the meat and dairy industry. Do we know the meat and dairy industry is destructive? Yes. Do we know that, you know, typical alcohol industry is, you know, extractive and destructive? Yes. I will not sit here and expect anyone to stop eating meat or dairy or stop drinking beer or wine.
Yeah, like, we can philosophize about it, but is that totally going to get us anywhere?
Exactly. No. But knowing that you have these options to incorporate them into your diet or your celebrations, for everyone just to cut back a little bit on your meat, cut back a little bit on your traditional wine, incorporate these things that are going to be so much better for you and for the environment. Like, why the heck not? We don't want you to give up your whiskey. Keep your whiskey. All we're saying is have a glass of meat every once in a while too.
Yeah. Yes. That would be great. Thank you, Kendra. You're right. Okay, so where do we take it from here?
So Kvasir is coming back. Kvasir was a really fun, special mead that we did for the first time last year. You can scroll back and find an episode entitled Kvasir. We did a whole episode all about the rich, beautiful history behind this mead. But for those of you that don't want to scroll back and listen to the entire thing, we would love to do a short little summary since we are going to be re-releasing this beautiful historic mead.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really awesome. So 3,200 years ago, 1200 BCE is archaeological evidence of Scandinavian people getting together at a important site. They don't know exactly what was going on there, but there's a young woman who may have been a priestess, may have been a dancer, an entertainer, who knows. She's buried in this rad outfit with all kinds of accoutrement and these drinking vessels. And these drinking vessels had this residue on them. And this archaeological team, including Dr. Patrick McGovern out of Pennsylvania, they excavate these drinking vessels and they scrape the residue off of the drinking vessels and they analyze the chemistry of this dust that's on these drinking vessels. And they find out that these drinking vessels used to hold a liquid, and this liquid was composed of honey and yarrow and bog myrtle or sweet gale. Myrica gale is another name for it. Lingonberries and birch syrup. And so Dogfish Head, the brewery out of Delaware, worked with Dr. Patrick McGovern to come up with a beer recipe. And we kind of took that recipe and adapted it to mead making. So left out any of the pieces that we don't want to deal with as a meadery, not a brewery, and made this drink that has been hugely popular.
Yeah.
Like, people are still asking for it. It's got a great story, but the flavor profile of it, the richness of it, like, there's this wonderful myth from Norse tradition about Kvasir, who's the Norse god of poetry, and his blood is used by these dwarves to make this epic drink that turns anyone who drinks it into a poet who can convince people of anything. And then this ogre catches wind of that and steals the drink and kills the dwarves. And then the ogre holds on to it for a while until Odin hears about it. And Odin sneaks into the ogre's palace and tricks his daughter into giving him a drink of the mead of poetry. And he says, when he drinks it, "A drink I took of the magic mead, and I began to know and to be wise, to grow and to weave poems." It's pretty epic stuff. So this is our iteration of that epic drink. And you can listen to the other episode to go kind of deeper into it, but that's the highlights.
It's so cool. I get goosebumps sometimes when I'm explaining it to customers, because, you know, I'll start with, like, "Well, this recipe came from archaeological findings," and I get like one sentence out and people are enthralled. Like, "I'm sorry, what did you just say?" Yeah. And then talking about, you know, the archaeobiologist and reverse engineering these findings. I mean, it is incredible work. It's such an amazing and moving story, and the mead is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It is complex, it is rich, it is unlike, I guarantee you, it is unlike anything you have ever had, and unlike any other mead you've had.
And we use our organic honey, so, and no preservatives. So we're really proud of the way that it comes out. It's complex, it's layered, it's rich. It's like, there's a lot to appreciate in that glass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The history, I mean, yeah, I love to nerd out on that. And I just think it's beyond fascinating, you know, to think about the similarities of this drink that we've created based on these findings and their recipes. And, you know, it just makes you think about how close we really are to ancient humans.
Whoa.
You know?
Well, yeah. Whew. Though it was only, what, in the late 1800s that Pasteur discovered yeast. And so before that, like, this biological process of converting sugar into alcohol, that was this divine connection, you know, like, mm-hmm. the brewers were usually women who had this opportunity to create something for their communities and throw herbs in there and make something that would make their people better. You know,
it truly is a potion.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it really is, it really is a potion.
You guys like very absurd rap. You can check out the Wizards album from 2009. Kendra turned us onto it a couple weeks ago. And while it's not appropriate for kids, it is just silly. And there's one song called Potion Making. And we've been laughing about that. But no, really, like this drink was probably a potion. And yarrow and Myrica Gale are known to have a number of properties. And, you know, honey, as we've talked about on the podcast, is this, it is the result of sun creating photosynthesis in plants, and the plants taking the energy of the sun and the water of the, you know, the soil and the atmosphere and the carbon dioxide in the air and synthesizing them into sugar, which if we didn't have that process, we would not have life as we know it. And then the plants are excreting that sugar as nectar to entice the bees to come and gather the nectar and the pollen and create reproduction in the plant world, which then creates fruit and nuts, which our hunter-gatherer ancestors and, you know, hominid ancestors had to eat to grow the brains that we have evolved with, or evolved to have. And so the modern world would not be possible without this, like, magical symbiosis between sunlight, plant, bee, and human, right? And so the beekeepers who have collected the nectar or the honey from these nectar gathering animals have given us this honey, and we can now create this drink that, like, synthesizes all of this. And so, yeah, like, people laugh about potions and magic, but, like, if you don't see the beauty and the awe in that, I feel like life must be very sad for you. But if you do see it, like, that's an opportunity to share it with other people. And I think one of the things that we talk about is, like, finding the language that's going to connect with people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes breaking down the science and the history helps people, like, really create a foundation of understanding, so then they can go into awe.
Yes.
You know, like, maybe we learn to be a little bit skeptical and a little bit cautious when we're feeling that awe, because mm-hmm. it's like, how many times have people used that kind of see what I'm saying to manipulate us or take advantage of us? But, like, when it's grounded in fact and it's grounded in a historical and biological and chemical record, like, does that now make us look at the whole system and go, whoa, we're a part of this, we get to witness this, and we get to co-create it, right? As the mead makers, we literally are co-creating it, but as the mead drinkers and the mead sharers, you can too.
Yeah, we get to share that reality then.
Yeah, so I think that's the next part of this conversation, is how do you take all of that awesomeness and turn it into an experience for friends and family, right? We're getting into the holiday season, there's going to be a lot of time to be with friends that we love, family that we love, and we want to share something that's going to delight them and going to make them feel good about this life, you know?
And make them feel good the next day still.
That's right. That's right. Not wake up with a headache. So let's talk about that. We'll take a quick break here, and then we'll talk about crafting a mead celebration.
Sounds good.
All right. Hey, everyone. Here at Golden Coast Mead, we consider drinking alcohol not only a luxury, but a celebration of life. If you partake in this celebration, we advocate for drinking regenerative mead made from real honey to help shift the $1.5 trillion alcohol industry in a better direction. When you drink our regenerative mead, you are helping to make the earth healthier, more biodiverse, and abundant. Drop monoculture-based booze and drink regenerative mead. Visit our website, www.goldencoastmead.com, to learn more about our regenerative mead business and be a part of the celebration. Cheers. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We were talking about how awesome mead is. Got into Kvasir, this epic beverage with a 3,200-year-old history. And then we wanted to talk about hosting mead events and how do you make all this awesomeness, the ecological synthesis of mead, the biological transformation that mead is, the historical connection with our ancestors that mead is. How do we make all this accessible to our friends and family who are coming over for a party, or we're bringing mead to a party, and how do we make it easy for people to get into mead, just like when we're at a festival and they're new to mead.
Totally. Yeah. Well, and Frank, you broke this down in such a beautiful way on how do you pair meads with what you're drinking or with what you're eating, what you're doing, what the occasion calls for. This is a question I get asked pretty often, and the way you kind of gave the baseline of where you want to go with the mead flavor is a great way to start, I thought.
Yeah. This is from Chrissy Zerper's book, The Art of Mead Tasting and Food Pairing.
Okay.
And she's this rad lady. She recently left Oregon, but she was a farmer in Oregon after being an Intel engineer and executive. Brilliant woman. And had a wonderful little meadery that made some of the best meads I've ever tasted, called Cuckoo Land. But she sold it all and retired and is now traveling and living a dream life, man. Congratulations, Chrissy. but she wrote this book, and she came up with these kind of two big approaches to mead tasting and food pairing. And one was contrast and complement. And then the other one was match and amplify. So you think about the party that you're going to have or you're going to go to. You think about what the theme is going to be and what the menu is going to be. And if you know what the menu is, you can either match and amplify or contrast and complement a meat to go with it. So there are foods that and flavors that work together and complement each other. And there's actually a book called The Flavor Bible, which is pretty rad. It's like a dictionary, and you pull open a page and there's an ingredient, and under that ingredient is a list of other ingredients that naturally go well with that ingredient.
Yeah, I think that is such a great resource. Any cook, brewer, fermenter should definitely have a copy.
And if you don't have it, you can Google it.
Yes,
of course. But you know, thinking about kind of these four meads that we're going to have a lot of this holiday season, and ways to work with those meads, we're going to have a lot of wildflower sour. We're going to have a lot of mulled sweet mead. So we take baking spices like cinnamon, clove, ginger, lemon peel, and put them in our sweet wildflower organic based mead. And you're going to get this like sweet mead up front that then kicks in with all these wonderful baking spices that are pretty intensely expressed, but then are balanced by the sweetness and the alcohol in the mead. And you can heat it up and drink it warm. And it's a delicious mulled mead, which is an ancient tradition. We don't need to get into that right now. Maybe we should have a different episode about mulled mead.
Hey, yeah, we might.
but we'll talk about pairing that. And then we've got the Kvasir. And then we've got mate on the other, you know, Kvasir, so complex, so many layers to it. And then on the other end of the spectrum, the very straightforward, lightly floral, very refreshing made mead sour orange blossom. And made mead is our line of refreshing session meads that we can and serve on draft and kegs. But it's very straightforward and people like it. At Viking Fest, we had it. And the descriptor that I used was light and floral. Like, it's just refreshing and floral.
Yes.
So understanding what the major characteristics of the mead you're going to be serving are is a key piece. So the wildflower sour is tart, refreshing, complex, but approachable.
Okay.
Right? Champagne-like.
Yeah. So for something like that, like, what would your ideal, or maybe not even ideal, what would be some foods that you more commonly see around this time of year that you would love to pair with the Wildflower Sour?
Yeah. I mean, California, I'm biased because we have citrus and avocados in the winter. We can get them year round, but that's when they come into season, right? And if you've ever had a citrus avocado goat cheese salad, it's like this magical thing that you're like, that's five ingredients, you know, lettuce, citrus, like grapefruit or oranges, avocado, goat cheese, and like olive oil, you know, maybe some salt and pepper. And then you have it with, right? I don't know if you guys can picture the flavor of this dish, but it's like rich, creamy, juicy, citrusy. And if the greens are fresh, right, they're contrasting that richness with this earthy green beauty.
Oh, yes.
And then like some salt, fresh cracked salt, like sea salt and fresh cracked pepper, and then like fresh olive oil with a little bit of spiciness to it, right? There's just so much richness in that. Now take this Wildflower Sour that is floral and tart and really bright and has its own citrusiness with a little bit of alcohol, but not really noticeable. And, you know, have your mouth full of this rich, creamy, citrusy salad. And now you take this sip of this refreshing, bubbly, bright drink.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's just like, it's like Ratatouille, right? Like you see the fireworks in your brain, and it's even better when you taste it. So that would be a match and amplify approach, right? We're taking the citrusiness and the layers of flavor, and we're adding a citrusy, bubbly, bright drink to it, and it's going to amplify that richness.
I love it.
Cool.
I love that. Okay, so I'm personally really looking forward to the mulled mead. To me, that is like everything that autumn and winter encapsulate in a drink, having this warm drink, the spices, everything. It makes me feel like I'm partying in 1899. I love it. Totally. So for something like that, with those rich herbs and spices, and you know, with it being served warm, like what's your ideal pairing with that?
Yeah, so mulled mead again has all these wonderful baking spices, and like we can think of the traditional American holiday dinner, like turkey, mashed potatoes, gravy, stuffing, cranberry sauce. Hopefully there's some kind of vegetable involved there, but we'll leave it at that baseline. And we're taking this drink that is honey up front. So that's going to work with the turkey. It's going to work with pork. It's going to work with gravy and mashed potatoes, right? Like adding honey to any one of those things. Like, yes, please.
Yes.
And then there's this intense, in our version of this mulled mead, it is a lot of spice. It's not like hot and burning. It's like a step below red hots, but just one step below red hots.
You know, it to me, it gave me that feeling. The first sip I had, it was like, it was warming instantly. The aroma is overwhelming in a good way. You feel enveloped by it. Mm. And right as I was getting ready to swallow, I all of a sudden had this feeling it was going to be like a hot alcohol burn, you know? And then once I swallowed it, it was just beautiful. You're expecting this, this like spicy alcohol, and like, it's great in your mouth and you're like, ooh, you're going to feel it going down. You're going to feel hot as soon as you drink it. And it goes down and you're like, oh.
And we drank this warm.
Yes, we drank it warm.
Like 50 Celsius, so like 100 Fahrenheit. Yeah.
Delightful. Not at all what, you would expect of like, you know, like a hard cider or something that's got some of those qualities. I mean, this was just perfectly rounded and balanced.
Yeah, we're really excited about this. So that meal, right, that traditional holiday meal with this sweet and then beautifully spiced mead is going to take the fat in the meal, right, in the gravy, in the meat, in the mashed potatoes, and the acids and the tannins and the spice from the the cinnamon, the clove, the ginger, the lemon, they're gonna dissolve the fats that are on your tongue, and they're gonna roll them around, So you end up getting to taste the flavors of the meal more and the flavors of the mead in this contrast and complement dynamic.
Is it Thanksgiving yet?
Good. Yeah.
I've been thinking about mashed potatoes since you said it. My goodness. Yeah. And, you know, bringing mead to, you know, your holiday events, any kind of get together or people coming over for a dinner party. I mean, when I say it's a showstopper, it is something that your guests or your friends will not forget.
I brought 32 ounces of the mulled mead over to a pumpkin carving party last weekend. And I expected it to like last the whole thing. It was gone within the first hour, which is great. And I was kind of like, oh man, it's all gone. But people were just stoked and they were telling each other about it. And yeah, I think it'll be a winner, as my grandma would have said. So mold, mead, match, and amplify, or match and complement, contrast and complement, what am I talking about? There's match and amplify, contrast and complement. Yes, mold, mead, and the American holiday dinner is the contrast and complement approach.
Before you get to our shining star of mead pairings with kvassir, food pairings with that one, the Made Mead Orange Blossom Sour 5%er that we have available. We talked about that one as well briefly. And I got a vegan pizza from a farmer's market. And I mean, it just was the perfect light, crisp, easily drinkable, you know, very lightly citrus. I could totally see cracking one of those open with a couple of fish tacos.
Yes.
I mean, this is... Yeah, this is your pizza. This is your taco. This is your fun times.
Margarita pizza. Yeah, something easy and light and casual. And then you add a little bit of made bean sour orange blossom, and it's like, oh, this turned into a party all of a sudden.
Yeah, and it really does just kind of brighten everything. It's the number one question I actually get when serving our seltzers, having people try them, is there alcohol in this? They're so easy to drink. They're so like refreshingly crisp, and they just don't have the lingering aftertaste of the artificial flavors and sweeteners you get with a lot of other hard seltzers.
Right.
And so if you're taking a sip of this and then you're going in to bite another bite of your food, you're not left with these lingering artificial flavors. It's like this crisp refreshingness to get you through to your next bite of food, and it's enhancing it and not overpowering it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're beautiful. So yeah, light, easy fare with the light, easy orange blossom. Good way to go about it. And then the last one.
Our shining star.
Yeah. We were talking about this, and what comes to me when thinking about working with a kvassir, it's like nothing. Like sit down and just appreciate all of the richness and the layers. And this summer I had a chance to do that with our first batch of kvassir. It had aged, you know, 6 months at this point. It was July, so we released it in January. And there were 10 of us, so we all got roughly 2.5 ounces. And we just like quietly sipped it.
Absolutely.
And everyone was just like, wow. I was like, yeah, isn't this amazing? This is what our ancestors were drinking 3,200 years ago, you know? One version of mead, because there's like mead tradition all over the world going back 4,000 years at least on every continent, which is just wild. So there they are drinking this magical drink, and here we are doing it too. And as you sip this drink, like just layer upon layer of flavor unrolls in your mouth. And you know, you could probably contrast that with something. Like, honestly, what comes to mind is like a cigar, but probably that's not a good thing to recommend, because we all know that cigar smoking is even less healthy than me drinking.
But I agree. I think this is one of those complex and beautiful flavors that, yeah, you totally could have it and pair it with other things, but it's got so much of its own personality. Why not just sip it slowly and absorb every little bit of that?
It. Yeah. there was a researcher who looked at the health of drinking and found that people who drank with friends in moderate amounts lived longer than people who were zealously healthy.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's something about the pleasure of life that makes it worth living, and therefore you live longer, you
know? Absolutely.
So I think that's an important thing to consider. And if you can get your hands on a bottle of Kvasir and open it with some really close friends and sit down and really appreciate it and enjoy it and tell this story of this 3,200-year-old mead and this molecular archaeobiologist who does these excavations and came up with this recipe, and then this beautiful craft mead company in Southern California that's so passionate about this and the bees and 10,000 flower visits in one sip, you know, and people are like, wait, what? And then you pour them this drink and then they sip it and they go, oh my gosh. And it's just in that moment, it's just so much pleasure. And then just this magic that bonds us with one another. And that's what we exist to create for y'all. And we're so pleased that you guys are tuning into the podcast and that there are thousands of people who listen to this thing. It's so rad. So we hope you love all of these meads this holiday season and feel prepared to host your own successful mead celebrations. And if you have any questions, Kendra, how can people get in touch with us?
Firstly, you can absolutely email us anytime from our website.
Just a little contact form at the bottom.
Yeah, a little contact form at the bottom. Send us any questions, comments, concerns you have about anything mead related. We love being in touch with anyone in our community. Please sign up for our email newsletter. Frank sends out beautiful poetry every week. And it kind of keeps you up to date on what's going on with the meadery, events that we're going to be at, as well as new flavor releases. And same with all of our socials. Join us on TikTok, Instagram, Threads. We keep it all very well updated. Lets you know what's going on with our hive up to the moment. We've got a couple really fun special events and markets coming up close for the holidays. The Alta Vista Gardens is hosting Novemberfest on November 18th. So that is going to be an awesome mead event.
Yeah, if you guys are enthusiastic about mead and want to taste a lot of different meads in one place, the November Fest at the Alta Vista Gardens in Vista, California is a really cool experience. Like, I think there's going to be 8 to 10 meaderies there, and then a number of craft breweries and music. And I'm not sure if the Viking guys will be there doing their blacksmithing, but sometimes they show up. So it's a mead party, to say the least.
And you can find all of those dates and events and info on our website, on our socials, through our email signups. So we really encourage you guys to stay in touch with us. We would love to get recommendations on podcast episodes you'd like to see. You can email us at podcast@goldencoastmead.com. If you or someone you know think would be a great guest for our podcast, shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we'd love to talk regenerative mead. We'd love to talk mead entrepreneurship. We'd love to talk regenerative entrepreneurship, regenerative activities. Like, if we could get Marla Spivak on our show, she's awesome. She's this brilliant bee researcher. I should reach out to her. She has supported us in the past. So
there we go.
Cool. Yeah. But if you all want to hear someone talk with us about what they love about nature and the world, and if we can tie some mead drinking and experience in there too, then we'll call it the Regenerative Mead Podcast and it'll be accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be awesome. So please join us at some of these amazing holiday events coming up. All of our farmers markets, our mead shop up here in Oceanside is open Thursday through Saturday. There's always a great variety up here. Smiling faces, chilled mead, excellent vibes. The vibes are immaculate.
Yeah, we would love to see you. So till next time.
Till next time.
Yeah, Kendra will be joining us. And luckily I have a sip left. Cheers.
Cheers. And that's a wrap on this episode of the Regenerative Mead Podcast. Please remember to like and subscribe and tell a friend. We would love to get your feedback at podcast@goldencoastmead.com.